Thank you to everyone who attended the 5th Annual WILL Ag Farm Assets Conference in Normal. We appreciate your support. A special thank you to these businesses for helping to make it possible: the Illinois Corn Growers Association, Syngenta, and TIAA. More details on agriculture at willag.org.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of December 2018. I'm Todd Gleason, coming to you today from Ferrand Banquet Center. We're in DeKalb, Illinois, with the Illinois Farm Economic Summit. It's just one more day of our event. That's tomorrow at the Aya Hotel. And if you'd like to join us, you can do so at 7:45 a.m. We open up the doors. Registration is just $90. It's been a great show with the agricultural economist from the U of I. Speaking of which, we'll be joined by Scott Irwin today. He's been presenting about the new era, or maybe it better said, an update of the new era work that he and Daryl Good had done in the mid-2000s, and where expected long-run prices for corn and soybeans might be. I'll say this about the IPIS: your banker is likely to be in the room. If you're not, you should be. Again, tomorrow morning at the I Hotel in Champaign. Cost is just $90, and you can join us at 7:45 a.m. On our program this afternoon, not only will we talk with Scott Irwin, but we'll be joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to take up what's been happening in Chicago and where he thinks we are at the end of the year as it relates to the charts. Dan will be here, and then, of course, we'll discuss the cash grain side of the market, too. Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds will join us, and as we wrap up our time together, Mike Tenora will come along. Mike is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, and it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, just before the hour of 1 o'clock, so these are not settlement prices in Chicago. Futures in the corn pit were down around a nickel for the day at 376.5. In the March, the May, 384 to quarter, 5.5 lower. Soybeans were 4 to quarter lower at that time at 895 and 3 quarters. In the January, November of next year at 944 and 3 quarters, down 4 to quarter. All the contracts following suit there. Bean oil down about 15 cents. The bean meal up 70 cents for the day. Wheat futures around 3-4 cents higher for the day. And the soft red, the hard red, also up 3-4 cents. Live cattle futures were about 60 cents higher for the afternoon. Feeder cattle up a buck. And the lean hogs for the day were around 45 cents higher for the afternoon. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. Here's what some of the other markets were trading like. Again, these numbers just before the 1 o'clock hour. Crude oil at about $2 a barrel lower. Ethanol futures around a penny and 9 tenths lower. Heating oil or diesel fuel 4 4/10 cents lower. And gasoline down around 3 cents for the day. Natural gas about 4 cents lower on the afternoon. The Dow is down around 400 points at that time. U.S. dollar at 95.77, down 0.714. And the S&P 500 off 32 points. Again, these numbers just before the 1 o'clock hour. And gold futures up $3.80. They were at $1,255.90. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area tonight says there'll be a chance of rain. That'll be before 2 a.m. and then more rain and snow. Cloudy, a low of about 32 this evening. A north-northwest wind at 9 to 16, gusting to 25. Chance of rainfall overnight set at 50%. That'll carry on into the morning hours through about 9 o'clock. Cloudy, a high of 36. North-northwest winds at 15 to 17. Chance of rain in the morning, about 20%, and then Friday night, cloudy and a low of 25 degrees. For Saturday, mostly sunny, a high of 40. Saturday evening, cloudy and a low of 28. Sunday, partly sunny to start the week with a high near 39 degrees. Sounds pretty nice. West winds at 7 to 9. On Sunday evening, cloudy and 24. And for Monday, this would be Christmas Eve day, mostly sunny, a high of 39. Monday night, cloudy and 29. And for Christmas Day, partly sunny, a high of 39 degrees, a chance of snow on Christmas Day Eve, mostly cloudy, and a low of 29 degrees.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, supporting the next generation of farmers with the Fresh Roots Young and Beginning Farmer Program, offering lending assistance and learning incentives to equip today's newest farmers for a healthy start in their farming careers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker is now here from Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Dan, thanks for being with us. I want to start in a different place today. I've been taking a look at a couple of charts earlier in the week, S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average. The Dow looks like it might have a double top in it. The S&P 500 kind of doesn't look so great. You watch these things pretty closely. What do you make of the outside markets at this point?
Well, my personal opinion, and I just want to emphasize it's my opinion. There's a million different opinions out there. But I think the big run-up in the Dow, basically for the past 10 years, I think that's all over with. I think it's totally fried. And one of the reasons why I think it's fried is, number one, the government kept interest rates, manipulated interest rates way low, way too long. And anytime you've got the government manipulating interest rates at the levels that we had for basically, you know, when you look at it, you know, for the last 18 years, we've had cheap interest rates. They've bubbled up a little bit here and there, but basically since 9/11, the Federal Reserve Board has had a quantitative easing, expansion of money supply, continues to, let the government go into deeper and deeper debt to the point where I'm not too sure how we're going to climb out of it. It's let not only the state governments, it's let county governments, city governments borrow money at extremely low, cheap interest rates. And I think the cows are coming home at this point, and we've got a rising interest rate market. And I think all of this heavy debt that we've got in the country, and I think we've even got heavy consumer debt. When I look at the toy business, and when I talk about the toy business, I'm talking about new automobiles, maybe new boats, new 4x4s, new RVs, you name it, golf carts. Everybody's pretty well bought up on that. I think people's bought up on that toy business to last a long time. So if I was in the toy business, I think I would be really scared trying to sell toys in a rising interest rate market, because it's just going to make everything more and more expensive. The other thing, the broader thing too, I look at, and it kind of goes back to even back in 1990, go back into the 1990s when Bill Clinton was elected government president. He went in and raised interest rates, raised taxes. The economy sputtered around for a couple years there in 93. And then 94, the Republicans took over Congress for the first time in something like 50 some years. And that is where the government really kind of like split government, because it put a check on what was perceived to be tax and spend Democratic philosophy. And when the Republicans took over Congress in 94, that just let the stock market just explode. As we went right on it, because there was no chances of tax increases or nothing. And then the stock market basically started to stall out in the late 90s and, of course, 2000. Then you had the dot-com for 99, I forget exactly. You had the dot-com bust, and that really took the NASDAQ for a roll. The Dow Industrial kind of hung in there, but the dot-com stocks just totally collapsed at that point.
Yeah, and the paper tigers at that point, China, which we expected to come on, and Japan had difficulties all in that same time frame. I think that was just prior to the dot-com bubble bursting, which had been in.
Right.
So that was late 90s, and then in the mid-2000s, the dot-comers went down. So that was kind of the next one.
Right. And then no longer than the market kind of stabilized out, then we had 9/11 and the fears that consumers would stop spending. They would stop going out into the malls. They would stop spending and start hoarding their money. And so we went into a very quantitative easing, money expansion, supply deal. in the early 2000s, which basically then led to the bubble, the housing crisis of 2008 and 2009, because the cheap money again creates careless lending, and the lending just totally got out of hand in the middle 2000s, where people were buying homes that could not afford them beyond, you know, the free interest rate for 90 days. Then everything came crashing down. And then ever since then, again, we've been in cheap interest rates. And that's the only thing that's really held the economy together. And now we've got two generations. We've got two generations of young adults out there that have no idea what high interest rates really are. If they think 2% or 3% interest rates are high, they got a rude awakening. As we grew up, and I'm not sure what normal is, but I know when we were growing up and coming out of college and buying our houses, it was nothing to pay 7% for a car loan. It was nothing to spend 8 to 9% for a mortgage. And then we saw interest rates go higher from that point forward. So I think that is the underlying deal. So I think we're now shifting, and this cheap interest rate money has forced everybody to put money into paper assets, stocks, which basically is just a piece of paper that says you own something. And I think that is terribly overbought. And now you're going to see that wealth from those paper assets move on over into interest-bearing notes. I think interest-bearing, you know, whether it's going to be CDs, money markets, whatever, is going to return. It's going to start returning some money, some return, and then it's going to be a little safer. It's going to be a little more stable and whatnot. So I think that's where we're headed longer term. As far as Washington politics, it looks to me like we're in for 2 years of nothing but investigations and impeachment talk, investigations and fighting and whatnot. Stock market doesn't necessarily like that. So I think that's just going to continue to encourage long liquidation of the stock market. So, and I think that dollar is going to get, I think it's going to struggle even with higher interest rates. I think the dollar is going to struggle to go higher in that, which I think is a bright spot for agriculture down the road, but I don't think it's necessarily real soon. I think it's still a little ways down the road, but higher interest rates are going to strengthen the dollar somewhat, but I don't think it's going to be a real, real negative as we go down the road.
Okay. So just a couple of quick minutes, market this week and what you think about corn and soybeans.
Well, the corn and soybean market is breaking here today. I don't think it's anything to be too concerned about. I kind of expected some kind of break in here because I do know there's a lot of farmers that needed to move inventory between now and the first of the year. We had the market was holding up pretty good after that initial announcement that China was going to maybe there was going to be some kind of trade deal worked out. And now what we're seeing is some long liquidation. And the way the market is set up this week going into a four-day weekend next week, you might as well call it a four-day weekend. I think we're just seeing some long liquidation going into the four-day weekend. And then we're no more getting done with the four-day weekend. Then we got a short week before we get into another four-day weekend. So I think we're basically liquidating and just winding down for the year. And but commodities are a concern. Anytime you talk about a billion bushel carryover soybeans, a billion bushel carryover in wheat, and if you're talking about big increases in corn acres, and you're talking about building stocks in corn, that's going to be a hurdle for the ag commodities to kind of wrestle with as we go on into 2019, unless we get into some adverse weather problems.
Hey, thanks so much. And I will talk to you in that second four-day week, because next week we're going to take off. Hey, I appreciate it much, and we'll talk to you in the new year then.
Okay. Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year then.
You too. That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Well, today we're traveling, of course, with the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, as we have been all week. Tomorrow we'll be in Champaign. If you want to walk in, 7:45 a.m., $90 at the I Hotel. One of the people that will join us there and is here today and been with us all week, of course, is Scott Irwin, agricultural economist. Scott and Daryl Good, in the mid-2000s, in that 2005-06 range, put together the new era, or at least what they thought the new era of prices for corn soybeans might be. And made some estimates. He has been talking about this on the IFAS meeting and what the new era might be like. And that really is just kind of an update of the new era.
Yeah, that's right, Todd. And so the time period of the eras after World War II that we've been looking at, you know, we're looking at 30, 35-year periods. That hasn't changed. But if you look, there's a really relevant pattern in each era where there's a big demand-driven boom in the first 4 to 8 years, and then there's a tendency for supply to outrun demand for the rest of the era and kind of have a slow grind down in prices. And it's that difference in the patterns that we're highlighting right now.
Yeah, so as you look at that, and you probably just scared a lot of farmers, wait a second, 4 to 8 years out of a 30-year pattern, how much of a downturn, and what's the difference in the pricing range?
Well, it varies. It's never the same in these eras. It was almost 50% in the era right after World War II through 1972. It was only down about 20 cents in the next era from 73 to 06. And right now we've seen a really big drop from the first 8 years. For example, about $4.90 is the average price for the first 8 years of the original new era that started in 2007. And the last 4 years, we've been just a little below 360 on corn. So we're talking a large difference of almost $1 a bushel on corn and $2 a bushel on soybeans so far.
So there will still be spikes in the process with supply shocks, things like droughts and other things, I suppose. Is that correct?
That's right. That's why I think we have to be careful about not getting too pessimistic about future price levels for corn and soybeans, because we have had very, very good weather the last 4 years. We are, in all likelihood, still going to have some big droughts, 2012 style, maybe not quite that big, but more like 2003. They will happen, and we will have these occasional bursts of some high prices. They will happen.
So you're thinking, I assume, two different things here as it relates to weather. Weather has been unusually good over this past time, which probably, and then a resumption of normal weather patterns would be more variable, and maybe some climate change process thrown into this as well.
It could be. The climate change is over such a long, many, many decades. It's hard to know what's really affecting our weather today from that. So I'm just looking at the frequency of droughts, and here in the Corn Belt is typically one out of every 8 or 9 years. And, we've just had one basically in the last 20 years. So, looking forward, I'm still going to think about droughts occurring at that historical frequency level. So that means we'll have some periods as we look forward, even though there is this tendency long run for nominal prices to drift down. We're going to have some really high prices when we have those production problems.
What's your midpoint for the new era, and what's your midpoint for the extended part of the new era for corn?
For corn, we originally said 460 for the entire era. We've now modified that in the second phase of the new era that we're really in now, using 375 as a long-run expected price. That's obviously a big drop, and $9 on soybeans.
When you get to the end of the era, and I'll ask about that $9 on soybeans in a minute, will you still have the 460 midpoint, do you think, over the long run of the era?
No. I think that, that actually turned out to be low for the first 8 years. For the first 8 years, we averaged actually over 490, so that was about 30 cents too low. I think for the entire, 30, however long this next era lasts, that'll just simply have been too high. It'll be kind of an average of 490 and 375.
And the soybean averages, important to note that those are calculated off the long-term corn-soybean ratio.
That's right. There's different ways to do it. These are all just benchmarks and have to be taken with a major dose of caution. But the way I do it is I take the corn price, which is $3.75. I assume a long-run average ratio of soybean to corn prices of 2.4 to 1, and that gives me a $9 bean price.
Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure.
Scott Irwin is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We're now joined by Matt Bennett. He's from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, to take a look at the cash grain side of the market. Hey, Matt, the market just keeps looking at the Chinese purchases and saying, yeah, we don't care so much. I guess they're thinking, or we're hoping, that they were bigger or that they're already built into the market. What do you think of it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the whole body rumor still back. Everybody kind of thought that might be what we end up doing, and sure enough, I mean, that's exactly what we've seen happen. You know, we had huge sales posted this morning on the weekly export sales report, and, you know, we still see that the corn and bean market, which were both huge beneficiaries of these sales, you know, I guess they weren't beneficiaries as far as price goes.
What's your view as you go into the next year?
Well, you know, I think we've had some pretty good opportunities to get a start on sales already. And so I don't want to get, you know, too worried about the current move where we're at. You know, we feel like this corn market could have some potential on down the road. And I don't want to give any away too quickly. As far as soybeans go, I've got a little more concern. We were awfully aggressive. You know, we don't have any old crop beans at all. And as far as new crop beans go, we haven't been terribly aggressive yet, but you know, we're up to about a third sold depending on the producer, and I think that's a pretty good place to be. And if you would get another push due to any of this trade news, I think a person needs to be stepping in and doing something with it.
You think China will be back in the market very much in the new year?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, the Brazilian soybean harvest is going to start a lot earlier than what it did last year. Definitely been some concerns lately with some dryness down there, but you know, it looks as though the first and second crop combined could be another record breaker. And the main thing is, with them coming online earlier, you're going to see purchases out of Brazil a lot quicker than we saw last year. So if China is in the new year, I think that it's going to be on a limited basis.
Anything else I should talk to you about today before I let you go?
No, I think that covers it for now. I just hope everyone has a Merry Christmas. We won't be talking to you until next week this time, other than Commodity Week.
Well, that's true. So we'll talk to you on Commodity Week. However, I will not talk to you to next week. I haven't told you that yet, but I'm taking the week off. I've already pre-produced programming for next week. And we'll talk to you on Commodity Week this afternoon, and you'll be up on the web tonight and tomorrow on the air, and then not until the new year for the next conversation about the cash grain market. Thanks so much for all you do for us here at Illinois Public Media and WILL. We appreciate it, Matt. Have a great Christmas with your family.
Yep, you too, buddy.
That, of course, is Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds, out of Windsor, Illinois.
Thank you to everyone who attended the 5th Annual WILL Ag Farm Assets Conference in Normal. We appreciate your support. A special thank you to these businesses for helping to make it possible: University of Illinois Extension, Strategic Farm Marketing, and Farm Credit Illinois. More details on agriculture at willag.org.
It's National Sangria Day. It's also St. Dominic of Silos Day, patron of shepherds. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, the first successful cotton spinning machine built using American resources began in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Samuel Slater was the first in the U.S. to reliably duplicate cotton spinning machines. Slater had immigrated secretly from England in 1789 with details of Richard Arkwright's machines memorized while an apprentice in a mill. In 1868, Harvey Samuel Firestone was born. An American industrialist, he started the Firestone Tire and Rubber Company in 1900. In 1906, he teamed up with Henry Ford to provide tires for the Model T. By the 1930s, nearly a quarter of all tires used in the U.S. came from Firestone. His innovations included non-skid tire treads, low-pressure balloon tires, and farm tractor tires. In 1879, Thomas Edison privately demonstrated his incandescent light at Menlo Park, New Jersey. Edison found that cotton filaments could operate for 40 hours inside a glass bulb vacuum. And in 1928, Harry Ramsden opened what would become eventually one of the most famous fish and chips restaurants in the world. The business began in a wooden hut, which still stands today alongside the main restaurant, which seats 250 people. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Friday afternoon. Hey, one quick note about tomorrow's IFAS. After lunch tomorrow, normally we don't have an event, but after lunch tomorrow, Jim Angel will be speaking, talking about climate change and the big papers that have been coming out from the United States government. Jim is retiring as Illinois State Climatologist. So here's the deal. If you want to come and just see him in the afternoon, right after lunch, so maybe 12:30, 1 o'clock, please do show up. Otherwise, IFAS is there. We're in the morning at 7:45, and registration is $90. Now, let's talk more about the weather forecast, because we have with us Mike Tenora today, as usual, from T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, thanks for being with us. Let's start with this question. We've been talking about some dryness in South America, Brazil in particular. Can you quantify that in any ways?
Well, we do have the tools to do that. And if we look at rainfall over the last 2 weeks, we can see that 83% of first crop corn production in Brazil was drier than normal over that period, and 87% of soybeans. This soybean number is pretty high. We're nearing 100% of soybean production having been drier than normal over a two-week period. And probably one of the more fascinating things about it is that there's been very little rain. So we're not just talking about being slightly dry. We're talking very dry. It essentially stopped raining about 2 to 2.5 weeks ago. This did not happen last year. Last year, the highest coverage of dryness that we saw topped out at around 50% of soybean production. So we're almost 40 points higher than that. And that is a potential issue if it doesn't rain coming up.
From that point, what's the forecast going forward? Will they get more rainfall?
Well, it does look like it's going to turn wetter starting up tomorrow night and Saturday, and then continuing over the 7 days that follow. We're first going to see thunderstorms in the southern growing regions, and that's the area that does need rainfall the most because they've been drier than normal over the last 30 days if you extend it out a little bit. As we head to the north, it hasn't been quite as dry because they did see rain a few weeks ago, and that front will continue to move northward through next week. So all of Brazil should turn considerably wetter over the next 7 to 10 days, maybe even heading into the first part of January. So that's one of the reasons that we don't have more concern than we normally would. We should note that it did look like it was going to turn wetter there about a week ago, and that has not happened to date. But from everything we can see, there's a large cool front that's moving through Argentina today, and that's what's going to change the entire pattern from everything we can see. It just might take a little bit more time for everybody to turn wet, but we think that 1 week from today, it will be looking a little better than it does right now.
Speaking of Argentina, they were the one that was really dry last year. Are they okay this year?
Yeah, they're doing great. The proportion of corn and soybeans that were drier than normal 1 year ago was similar to what we're seeing now in Brazil, hovering at around 90% over the past two-week period. But as of today, those numbers are only around 15 to 20%. So it's just way wetter in Argentina, and it's been a lot cooler as well. So between all of that, the concerns this year in Argentina are low. And again, they're a little high in Brazil, but with this forecast, that should alleviate things going forward.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me for the day.
You're welcome, Todd. Great being here.
That, of course, is Mike Tenora. He is with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. I'm Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.